This episode is presented by Chemists in the Kitchen by LabX, a love letter to science, cooking, and individuality. Subscribe for free at youtube.com/labxnas.
This week on Meat and Three, we're turning an eye to food at its trickiest, from imitation olive oil to the pretensions of 3D printers.
We were just doing like a birthday party for one of the employees, and we printed a steak just for fun.
You know, a grape Jolly Rancher isn't going to satisfy your craving for grapes. So, I mean, in a sense, it kind of multiplies the sensory qualities that we can love in the world.
So basically, you culture the cell in a bioreactor, it grows, and then ultimately, at the end, you come out with a piece of meat.
Tune in to Meat and Three, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey there, and welcome to the Feed Feed podcast. I'm Alexa Santos, a food editor at the Feed Feed, the world's largest crowdsourced food publication and social media community, serving as your daily source for what to cook, bake, eat, and drink. Throughout season four of the Feed Feed podcast, we will be trying to help you solve the daily question that we're all faced with, which is, what's for dinner? Each week, we will be speaking with members of the hashtag Feed Feed community who are a constant source of ideas and inspiration and help us get dinner on the table every night. Today, I am joined by Lamise Atarbashi. Lamise is an MBA engineer turned TV chef and personality. She's an international culinary enthusiast with a focus on representing Arabian cuisine in a very fun and approachable way. Check her out on social media at Lamise Atarbashi. Welcome to the Feed Feed podcast, Lamise. I'm so excited to have you.
Thank you so much for that intro, Alexa. It was amazing. And I really hope I live up to it. And people like this podcast. So thank you for having me. It's so exciting.
Of course. Amazing. So let's do a quick little recap of what's going on with April is for Arab Food Month. Obviously, it's April right now.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about that initiative before we get into your culinary past, because I know that's a very timely, relevant topic right now.
Yeah. So it's basically focusing on Arab food, and it was initiated by two of my friends. We're trying to focus a lot on Middle Eastern cuisine and Arabian cuisine in general, and just trying to introduce it to people who are not familiar, because let's be honest, Alexa, like a lot of people are not aware of Middle Eastern cuisine or Arabian cuisine. They know hummus, falafel, shawarma, but that's about it. Like, we're hoping within this initiative to shed some light on the food that we have. Like, there's so many cuisines within the Arabian cuisine itself. There's so many countries. So in each country, there's so many dishes, and it's an opportunity for us to showcase it. And hopefully people would be intrigued to at least try a dish. Maybe, you never know.
Yeah, no, it sounds like such a good idea. And is this initiative mostly happening like on social media, or how is like the activation of this? Where can people see this information?
It's focused mainly on Instagram and within the hashtag itself. So if you click on that hashtag, you're going to see all the dishes and a lot of introduction and explanation of this dish and the ingredients. So it helps in educating people about the cuisine. If you're not familiar with a certain ingredient, if you're not familiar with a certain dish, it really helps like an introduction to that.
Very cool. So tell us a little bit about kind of your background. I know you moved over to the States from Dubai, but is that where you're from, or what is your kind of your background?
So I was born in UK. I'm multicultural. So I lived in a house where it was British and Iraqi. My father is Iraqi. So I was introduced early on to two different kinds of cuisines. And my upbringing, let's say, is very interesting, because being exposed early on into these two cuisines, it helps like with expanding your horizon to different kind of food and obviously your palate. So, and my mom is an excellent cook. She's not a chef, but, and I am a chef, but I always say that she is much better than me. She has this capability of coming up with recipes, and her interest in food, like she's in her 70s right now and she still has that energy. It's never slowed down. And I hope I can live up to that energy when I'm at her age. So it's so it's so intriguing to see someone who's so in love with that, with food. And I think, and I believe that I got that from her. So living in the UK, I was in an area where it was not my heritage, it's not my background, and obviously it's not my culture. And I was living in a place that doesn't celebrate my culture, let's say. So I lived there till I was 10 years old, and then we went back to Iraq for a few years, and then we went back to Dubai. And I left later on for Malaysia for my MBA. But within my family, I stayed in Iraq, and I started to learn about the Middle Eastern food. However, my Arabic was so bad that because I never learned it, and people made so much fun of my Arabic. Until now, it is made fun of because and it's not even my Arabic. Even my English is. So I'm not good at this one, I'm not good at that one, and I'm in between. So it's,
oh my God.
It feels like, honestly, Alex, I feel like I'm out of, like a fish out of water. I don't belong to any part. It's because of the traveling so much, and you get to mingle with different kind of cultures and different in different countries. You get that feeling of not belonging to anyone anymore because you're not speaking the language, you don't have the accent, and you don't understand the culture. So it is confusing at times, but at the end of the day, I do appreciate the life that I had, the experiences that I've got to go through, and all the countries that I got to visit. So regardless of all of that, I'm very fortunate to live the life that I lived. And going back to the Middle East, it was a challenging time for me because you're trying to fit in. However, like the mindset is different, the culture is 100% different, but I got to learn about the food, and that aspect by itself is amazing. And my mother started to heavily cook in with the Middle Eastern food and ingredients, and it intrigued my interest in food. And how it started exactly when I was 9 years old, and this really what triggered my love for food. And it was through a kid's book. Like I was reading a book. I till now I love reading books. It's just I'm fascinated, and I'm trying to teach my kids the same. And luckily, Naya, my daughter, she is exactly like me. She reads like 2 books a day. She is obsessed. So going back,
oh my gosh, that's so cute.
Yeah. So going back to the book, I don't remember the name. I don't remember anything apart from it having a recipe. And I always say, like, imagine a mindset of a kid, of a 9-year-old kid, and seeing something written like a 200 or 400 gram of flour and butter. Like, you're not going to understand what that is. So
right,
I couldn't understand what a recipe is. So what I did is I went to my mother and I told her, Mom, what is this? And she told me, this is how you make a cake. It was a lemon cake. So I told her, you know what, Mom, okay, can you tell me, like, how do I approach, what can I do with this? Tell me, I can teach you how to do a cake. And so she helped me step by step on how to make the cake and mix it and then put it in the oven. And I sat, like, the oven was on a lower level. So I sat down and just stared at it for 40 to 45 minutes.
Oh my
just
God.
Waiting for it to bake. And obviously, Alexa, once it was out, I did not share it with any single person. I was so proud of myself. But creating something, that feeling of creating something from nothing, I think anyone is fascinated by it. Like if you're an architect and you build create a building out of nothing, it's that feeling of you created something. And it's the first feeling I had when I was 9 years old of creating a recipe, of creating a dish, whether it's a savory or a cake or whatever. It's that feeling of you feeling proud and satisfied that you actually did it. You made something and it's delicious, not just something bad. It's really good. So,
oh my gosh.
That was the flame that started everything.
Oh my God, that is so cute. And that's so like, that's adorable and just like an amazing story. And you have such like a precise moment to pinpoint when your love of food started. Most people, you know, it's obviously a lot more vague and just kind of like, yeah, my mom always cooked and I liked it. Or, oh, I always went out to eat with my grandparents and I liked it. But you have such like an exact moment when your kind of spark for, you know, loving the culinary world happened for you. And that's like, that's the cutest story. Yeah, I love it.
It's nice to go back to it. And that's what I'm trying to, being a mom of two, a 6 and a 7-year-old, I'm trying to implement the same thing that I experienced when I was young. And luckily my kids are starting at an even earlier age. Like my son is 6, Adam, and he already knows, like, for example, how to make pancakes and waffles. Oh. And hopefully scones. Like, we're getting there, but he has my passion, not my daughter. Oh. My son has my passion, and it's so like, you feel so proud when you see one of your kids it's like it got transferred to them. And I think this is what my mom felt when she saw that I loved food and cooking. So I imagine my mom felt the same thing that I'm feeling right now.
Oh my God, that is so adorable. And I'm so happy for you that you have that kind of light to watch in your son, kind of like, as you said, pass down what your love to him. That's so amazing. I love that. He's so young. He has so much time. I mean, he's going to be, if he's already doing pancakes and waffles and stuff now, he's going to be the next Gordon Ramsay, I can tell.
You know, he gets upset.
He's going to be awesome. So Lamise, I know you told me a lot about kind of like your family dynamic with your mom being so involved in the kitchen and sharing her love of cooking with you. But what were some of the like cultural dishes that you enjoyed as a child, or, you know, some of those things? I know you were kind of living all over the place, but what were some of those dishes that you had at home that were kind of rooting you to your culture?
So one, because I was into a multicultural family or household, I got exposed to the lovely British comfort food and at the same time the Middle Eastern and also the Iraqi kind of food. So one day my mom would make a meat pie. The other day she would make dolma or kebab. And there was also always a mix between these two cuisines. And every day it was exciting to eat something else. So to this day, I still crave those British food that I grew up eating, and I always make them. But at the same time, I still make the Middle Eastern kind of food, and sometimes I even infuse the two just to create something new and exciting. So it is always fascinating when you think about how or what kind of food you grew up and how it really affected the way you approach food. And I credit that hugely to how I see food now and how I create my own recipes and how I come up with a twist on the recipes that I'm introducing, because it is not like 100% authentic. It's more of creating it in a way that is much more faster and much more fun, but trying to maintain the main ingredients of the recipe itself. So that was my answer to your question, Alexa.
Amazing. So my family is actually British. So what are some of those like British comfort food dishes that you loved?
What I remember is extensively the gravy and the pies, a lot of pies when it comes
shepherd's pie.
Yeah, the shepherd's pie. We even created a twist when I told you, like, we infuse pasta inside of it. I know it's weird. What? It's not even shepherd's pie anymore. But we came up with a new recipe because of our love for shepherd's pie. So, and we eliminated the mashed potatoes that's on the bottom and on the top. It's not even shepherd's pie anymore.
Yeah, what even is that? That's like lasagna.
Yeah, but it started from the love of shepherd's pie. Like, I would make the shepherd's pie once every a few weeks because my family loved it so much. However, my husband came up with an idea of adding to the mixture, the inside mixture, let's add some pasta, the macaroni kind of pasta. So I said, how can you do that? That this is an authentic British recipe. You cannot mess with such a thing. He said, trust me on this. And Alexa, he invented something so good. I cannot even begin. So going back to your question, it was a lot of pies and a lot of things that had gravy with it. And the mashed potatoes, like I remember the veggie sides and the mash and these pies. It was more focused on the pies. That's what I remember. I haven't asked my mom, like, what other foods did you introduce? But these are the ones that I grew up remembering. And there's even a sausage pie. Like, she focused so much on creating things with pies. So that was the aspect of the British food and the comfort food that I was exposed to growing up.
Oh my gosh. So what was your mom making? I know you said your dad is Iraqi. And what is your mom? What was she making? That was more like, I guess, from her background.
She was making the British food, part of it, and also she's Kurdish, so she's half Kurdish, half British. So she was infusing a lot of that, and she introduced me through her heritage with the food from the Kurdish aspect. Like, there's a certain kind of dolma only made in the Kurdish part of the world. So it's a lot of it is Middle Eastern. So it wasn't infusion between the two, Alexa. So I can go into details, but it's like it is confusing because it is like a mix between this and this cuisine.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors.
This episode is presented by Chemists in the Kitchen by LabX, a new video series spotlighting the power of chemistry and how science and food can bring people together. It's a love letter to science, cooking, and individuality. In the first episode, three chemists swap cookie recipes, and once they finish baking, they ship them back to the recipe's owner. Along the way, they share insightful information on how chemistry can help you become a better baker. Watch the first episode and subscribe to the series for free at youtube.com/labxnas.
So, Lamise, I know you had your lovely story of how you were inspired to get into the kitchen once you made your lemon cake when you were 9 years old. So after that, what was kind of your culinary journey and how did your culinary life develop after that moment for you?
So in generally speaking, in the Arab culture, we are very familiar when it comes to, very similar to the Asian culture when it comes to education. Like, you're either an engineer or a doctor, and you get the highest GPA, you're going to go with the highest thing you can get. Regardless, if you have a passion with something else, it doesn't matter. You're going to go and be an engineer or a doctor. So that was the only options that I had on my table. And going to my parents to tell them, you know what, I have a passion for food. Like, it's not something you should do. Like, it is not recommended. So that being said, and it's also like there was never a career to consider, especially in the Middle East. Maybe here in the US it's much more approachable, but in the Middle East it's not something like it's looked front like in not a very positive way, let's say. So that was never an option. That was not even a consideration. So my approach was obviously going into the engineer field and focusing on computer engineering. And my father, being a doctor, a PhD, having a PhD in computer science, it really like set the tone for where I want to go. And so that's obviously what I wanted to do, thinking that this is what I really want. I only discovered like in mid-college, in the third year, that this is not what I want. This is not like my passion at all. But I had to finish, like everything was paid and I have to just go with the flow. So I completed my degree and my major was actually robotics and like mechatronics. And
oh my God.
Yeah, like it was completely different. It has nothing to do. And there's always, I always say like you can like be good in something, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have a passion for it. And that was my situation. Like, I even when I applied for a job at Microsoft, I had to take 7 exams for me to be even considered to get a job there. And that 7 exams took me a whole year to finalize. So my journey in being an engineer, it was years of education, years of trying to get to where I wanted to, thinking that was what I wanted to get. And so I got a job at Microsoft as a project coordinator as my first job. And I got a very low salary in the beginning because it was my first job. But on the promise of if I prove myself within a year, they would offer me the double amount of salary, thinking that I would not be up to the challenge. But I was. Within a year, I was able to double my salary and become a program manager. So I was good, Alex. I was really good in my job, but I hated it.
I bet.
I hated it. I would wake up in the morning, like lying in the bed and thinking, you know what? I cannot keep doing this. This is not what I love. And I think you all agree, like you and the listeners, that you have to have a passion for you to be able to enjoy. If you're not enjoying what you're going to do, imagine what this situation going on for the next 5 years. Like, that's torture. You're torturing yourself while living. Like, why would you do that to yourself? And with that consideration, I said, you know what? I can't keep living like this. I have to take that move of, you know what? Let's take it seriously and let me go follow my passion. And luckily, I had a supportive system, which is my husband. He's so supportive. And we knowing that if I'm going to shift my career, that means I'm going to lose a 6-figure income. And we're going to be depending on one salary only and downgrading our lifestyle and everything. And he was up for it. He said, you know, if this is what you want, then do it right now. And that's what I did. But luckily, Alexa, when I transferred, it wasn't instantly. It was like gradually. I started while I was doing my job on the weekdays. I would take my diploma in culinary arts on the weekends. There was a program specifically for people who had jobs. So I was fortunate to have access to that. And although I was living in Abu Dhabi, which is the capital of the Emirates, Dubai is a city. It is not the country. Just people assume Dubai is a country. It is not. It is a city, and it's not even the capital. So we would drive an hour and a half just on the weekends just to get to my school. And I always remember that feeling, like, how did I know this is what I love? I went before, like, signing up, before deciding on that. I went to the school. I was in between two choices. I have never shared this before. I was either considering being an actress or going with culinary field. I'm not kidding. Like, these were two options I had. I had a passion also for acting. I love the camera. I love being in front of it. And I assumed, like, the only way to do that was just being an actor. So I went to, there is a New York Film Academy in Abu Dhabi. So I went there and I did visit it. And I even got the director touring me around the facility and showcasing all the classes and everything. But there was something missing. I didn't feel that I belonged. I didn't feel that. Mm-hmm. So the next week I went to visit the culinary school. The moment I stepped in, I felt I belonged 100%. Like, I knew this is where I belong. Like, the feel, I can still remember it so well. Just being in the kitchen in the culinary school and seeing people so focused on creating a recipe. From that moment, I said, you know, this is it. And that's when I decided this is going to be my focus. I had no idea what I was going to do, Alexa, like career wise. It was just like approaching my passion. But what was the next step? There was no plan. So I said, let's just take it step by step and we'll see where it goes. I had no concern, like, well, am I going to go work in a restaurant? I had no idea. Like, there was no plan, but it was just following my passion. So I was taking the classes on the weekends and just finishing my job as a program manager on the weekdays. And luckily, like, I started to create, I was one of the first people who created a Facebook. Like, I'm so old.
Stop. You did what you had to do.
So I was one of the first people who created a Facebook and started to upload my recipes and just sharing with. And my approach was a bit different from people in the Middle East. I approached it from not a fine dining cuisine, but plating. I did a lot of plating. I was fascinated by the concept of plating a dish. Usually our food is like piling it in one large dish and just, you know what, just share.
But yeah, go for it.
Yeah, exactly. So my approach was completely different. Sorry, my mic fell. So I wanted to like focus individual dishes and showcasing that. So I got a lot of backlashes. I'm not going to lie. People did not like that because he said, this is not enough. I would tell them, you can go get some more. Like, this is not, I'm not defining the quantity of how much you want to consume. It's just plating it in a presentable way to make you feel hungry. So that was my approach. And luckily I got noticed from a TV channel there in Dubai. So they sent me an invitation to be on a live show. So imagine like from going from zero to live show.
Yes. That was, oh my God.
When I remember it, Alexa, it was so funny. Like when they told me, they called me and said, we want you on our show. It is a 7-minute segment and just try to showcase a recipe or two. And that was a mistake when they said two. I thought, okay, yeah. So I thought, okay, if I can do two, maybe I can do three.
Oh boy.
And that's an inexperienced person, keep in mind. So what I did is I took a full suitcase of ingredients and equipment, thinking that, you know what, this is what I'm going to need. This is what I'm going to be able to produce within 7 minutes. And I'm telling you, my husband did not like that at all. Like, he was carrying that bag with me and hating every minute of it. But you know what? Like, he was just going with the flow. He did not want to upset me, and he was trying to be so supportive of my inconsideration of him in general.
You were chasing your dreams.
I went there, and obviously, like, I only used a few ingredients from the whole bag, and it was very exciting. But I was good. I was like, I felt I belong, like talking about food and loving the camera. I had no issue with the camera, although a bit intimidated in the beginning, but I just got in there and I felt I was home. And once the segment was done, they said, you did amazing and all of that. Within a week, I got a phone call from the vice president of the channel himself. And he said, we saw your segment and we're seeing your food on Facebook. We want to have a full cooking show just for you.
Oh my gosh.
It happened so fast. And this is why I was still working as Microsoft. Like, it happened one after the other. And I obviously said, yes, why not?
Yes.
Going into something I had no idea, no training, no experience whatsoever. And they had no experience because they were not a cooking channel. They were a regular channel with all type of shows, but they wanted to include a cooking show within their segments. So lack of experience from my side, lack of experience from their side. We had so much fun the first year. Honestly, the mess we made in the first few days trying to figure out how to approach it, it was fun. Like, it wasn't a real interesting experience, but you learn a lot. From me, trying to talk and trying to smile while cooking, I think you know how hard that is, because usually when you're cooking or focusing on the
food, you're concentrating.
Exactly. How are you supposed to smile while doing that? So that was something I had to learn so fast, because we rented a studio that had a marvelous kitchen. The company is called Miel. I think it's a German. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Okay, so they have like the kitchen equipment and all of that. And they had a studio where people can go and host like cooking classes and all of that. So we rented that on the most expensive road in Dubai. It's called Sheikh Zayed Road. And if you want to rent something that is very, very expensive. And so we were able to book it for a month. And we had to finalize these recipes within a month. So That being said, we messed up the first few days trying to understand how to maneuver on the camera, how to be presentable, what to say, what not to say, and all of that. But it was fun for the first year. The second and the third, it was much, much easier. And that is how it happened. And once I realized this is like everything was opening up in front of me, I just quit my job and said, this is what I'm going to focus on. So when a person approaches me or just asks me this question, is it worth following your passion or is it too late? I would always say it's never, ever too late and go for it. Aww. You'll never know what kind of doors will open in front of you. So, yeah.
Oh my God, what a story. My God. And so you've been doing this now full time for how long?
Before my kids, and I have to emphasize on that these happens, Alexa, before the kids. So no responsibilities ever. You can do whatever you want. You can stay up late. Like we would record from 10 a.m. till 7 till 8 p.m. And it was fun. It was fine. And because I had nothing else to do, so it was really fine. However, when the kids came, and that was in my second show, it became really hard. With a baby, like Naya was still 2 months old when I had to do my second season. So with the responsibility, everything shifted and I had to try to divide my attention between the two. So going back to your question, it's been going since 2010, I think it's 2010 when I started to take it seriously a bit. So, and started to post much more within 2011 and 12. So, that was where the shift started to happen.
Amazing. Yes. So you're doing this, you're rocking, you're rolling, you're on all the social medias, you're moving and grooving. But for when you're making dinner for you and your family, what are some of the dishes that you're doing, you know, for your loved ones?
When I have time or when I don't have time?
I guess both.
Okay, so we are meat eaters. We love meat. What can I say? So a lot of our dishes are focused around meat, and we do a lot of stews where rice is a side dish, and there's a lot of stews where you incorporate a lot of vegetables in it. So because I'm trying to focus on Middle Eastern cuisine and Arabian in general, I'm trying to focus that a lot in my cooking because I want to perfect it as much as possible. Because for me, if I'm going to showcase a recipe online, it has to be tested a lot of time. And that includes my infusions and with me changing a little bit and infusing two types of cuisines, let's say, into one. So I do a lot of testing and unfortunately, my family is the guinea pig. And luckily... issues have arisen till now. So I am blessed. I do believe like a palate is something you can develop, and fine taste in food, that's something you can develop and enhance throughout. It's not something you are born with. I don't believe you're born with that. You can actually develop it and start to really enhance the way you cook by developing and learning through tasting other food and going to restaurants and trying food and trying to explore. I think this really, really helps with developing your palate and reaching a point where you can distinguish ingredients and know how to really work a dish and create a really good recipe. One of the things that happened to me while in Dubai is while I was doing my show, because I want to talk about the palate and how to and how to work within ingredients. Mm-hmm. I was approached by a show while I was shooting my show, and it was a competition. Like they said, do you want to participate? Where it's gonna be like you're competing with other chefs. And if you get to the last six, it's going to be a live competition on TV. And I said, okay, you know what? Like, why not? I have nothing to do. I have no kids. I have no responsibility. Why not? Why not? So I said yes, and I had my first interview with them, and I talked to the chef. They wanted to see my background, my experience, and luckily with my culinary experience or education, it really helped me with answering these tough questions, because the ones who were asking me were executive chefs and all of that. So first phase, I passed. It was easy. I took a break from my show, and I went and did the first interview, and then I never put too much thought into it. I never thought it would go to the second phase. I think we always doubt ourselves when you say, oh, no, I'm not good enough. I don't have that experience that other chefs have. And I, unfortunately, at that age of, or that stage of my life, that was my situation. I always doubted myself because I was still new to the field. I didn't have like years of experience in comparison to a chef. So I got a phone call before my show. They told me today you pass, you're within the last six, and we're gonna do a live show today.
Oh boy.
Where, and that was like before my, because we were recording two episodes a day. So I finished the first one. Luckily, it was in between. I told my my producer I need to take a break. I didn't tell him why. I said I need. They don't know till this day. They don't know.
Oh my God. Well, now they're
going to
know.
Now they're going to know. I didn't know how they would respond to it. So I'm not affecting my show in any way, but I didn't know what they would respond to it. And it would not affect them anyway, but I didn't want to get another negative response and it would affect my decision of going there. So I took the break fully. I went to the, and I was like, even if with my full makeup and everything, they put me in a chef's jacket and like lights and cameras. I didn't know it was live, like the cameras were on, and they brought the head of culinary, I can't remember the institute over there. Like he's a German chef. Uwe, I can't remember his position, but he's a very, very well established chef over there. And he was the judge, and two other executive chefs from different two restaurants. And, they had like what do they call it? Like a table for you where you can cook on it and everything. So,
oh boy.
And there were six, and each number, and they started, okay, you know what, now we want you to, we're going to give you a box with 10 ingredients, and we need you to come up with two recipes. And you have to like live do all of that within 1 hour.
Oh my God.
So, you know, it was like MasterChef, where they give you a box and you come up with these two ingredients. So I came up with two recipes instantly. A bolognese chicken, where you take you debone half of the leg of chicken and the thigh of the chicken, and you leave the other one tangling, and you stuff it with a mixture of minced mushroom, and then you wrap it up with bacon if you eat bacon, if not then with turkey bacon or whatever. And when you cut it, it becomes these circle meat. It's a really fascinating dish when you do it, and it's really delicious. That was one of the dishes that I came. It's a French one. And the second one was a chocolate mousse with caramelized peach underneath the bottom. So those were the ingredients I saw, and this is what I came up with. And every single, I was seeing Chef Uwe, like he was holding a book, or let's say a copybook, where he was, I saw that it was all of our names, and he was putting these check marks in front of each name. And I unfortunately saw in front of my name the most checks. And at that moment, like I felt so, okay, what did I do wrong? Did I do something wrong? Like, why do I have the most checks in front of my name? And I started doubting myself 100% at that moment. But luckily it turned out it was based on how clean your station was. And my my station was the cleanest, but I was just trying to go back to the point where you so doubt yourself and always see something and you think of it in a negative point of view. And that was my situation back then. However, like cutting the story like to a short point, and luckily I won the show back then and the competition, and I got in Thailand. So that being said, culinary school really helps with sharpening your, if you have a talent for cooking, it really helps with that. And for sure, you need to have background about how to approach food. I always see it as a chemistry between you and the food. You have to understand the ingredients, what to put first, how to approach it, what do you put last, how to approach spices, when to put it. Like, this is all a chemistry, and understanding mm-hmm. that really helps with creating a beautiful and amazing dish.
Wow, what a story. You're chock full of cool stories.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
That's amazing. So now that you've had all these like crazy experiences and you're cooking at home, like what are some kind of staple ingredients that you always have in your kitchen?
So and from the part of the British part of me will always have the gravy. And the Arbisto, if you know that, it's a British brand. It's a British brand. It's like, it's a staple, 100%. I've been using it from the day I was born. Like, my mom used to cook with it. Until now, I would order it from UK. I cannot live without
what
this.
What is it?
It's like A-H-H-H. It's like Arbisto. It's a gravy.
Is it like a gravy? Okay, okay.
Okay, so it's a powdered gravy. You add water to it and you create this gravy. So that is a staple. 100%. I cannot live without.
That's so funny.
Yeah. So, I even ship it from UK. I love it so much. They have so many varieties. And the other one from the Arabian, let's say, culture, I have a couple that I cannot live without. Is the za'atar, 100%, and the pomegranate molasses.
Those are good ones.
I add that to everything. Like, it's just so good. Who doesn't love sweet and sour? Like, who doesn't?
That is, oh God, yeah, that sounds so good. Is pomegranate molasses, do you make it or do you buy it?
You can make it, but like, it's a $3 a bottle. It's not even worth it. So, but
yeah,
you can buy it from the Arabic stores. It is, and I'm assuming it is also available on Amazon.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because I feel like I don't see it like a whole lot at stores in the US, but you can order it on Amazon or, you know, probably specialty stores. Yeah. But that sounds like something I need.
You definitely, I would highly recommend it.
Because whenever I've had it at, you know, in dishes at restaurants, you know, I love it and it's delicious. So I'm kind of convinced that I need some of that. I also need to use some more za'atar seasoning in my life too, because that's another important thing that I feel like I'm missing right now.
It is so good. It is so good. Like, I cannot even imagine my life without them now.
Okay, you maybe have me convinced.
Maybe. We need to talk later on and showcase a few recipes that I have. I'm definitely sure you're going to be convinced once you see them.
Yes. Yeah, I need you to give me like Lamis cooking 101.
I would love that. I would love that. Yeah.
Yes, that's so fun. Oh my gosh. Well, Lamis, this has been such a treat having you on here. Was there any other important parts of your story or your culinary journey that I didn't ask you yet?
I think you covered everything. I'm just right now focusing on representing this cuisine, this beautiful cuisine that I love so much, through social media. I'm trying to approach it in a really fun way, Alexa, because I always put myself in other people's shoes. Like, I can imagine like how they would see a cuisine they're not familiar with. So I always keep that in mind when I'm trying to showcase these recipes. So trying to create these fun videos that are 30 seconds long and people get to enjoy. And I hope one day they will get to try these recipes out.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. And especially, you know, as we mentioned earlier, you know, with April being hashtag April is for Arab Food Month, you know, giving people that opportunity to kind of learn more and delve more into that cuisine that maybe they didn't know as much about, or if they want to learn more about it, or even just watch you guys making the food and hopefully pick up some inspiration here or there. I think it's, you know, a really good time to be talking about this and kind of shedding some light on the different elements of that cuisine. And like you said, there's so much that people aren't familiar with about it. So hopefully it's kind of bringing that awareness.
Yeah, I hope so too. Like, and I do want to thank you, Alexa, for giving me the platform to be able to talk about this. You are amazing. And I always love talking to you.
Yes, an absolute delight. Well, Lamis, thank you so much. Thank you, everybody, for listening. To learn more about the food and drink discovery platform that is the Feed Feed, head to thefeedfeed.com. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at the Feed Feed. And don't forget to follow Lamis Atarbashi, that's spelled L-A-M-E-E-S, ATTARBASHI on pretty much every social media platform. You can find her there. If you have a food story to tell or want us to interview a blogger, cookbook author, chef, or restaurateur who has helped you solve that question, what's for dinner? We would love your suggestions. Just send us a DM on Instagram. See you next time.
The Feed Feed is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradio.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from our listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Thanks for listening.